And good evening. It is Lori Houston here, your host to Intuitive Soul Radio. And this evening, we have a special guest. We're looking at a pretty amazing book called Limitless You by Lee Gerdes. Is that Gerdes? Sorry. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you.
So I really had an interesting time reading this book because I'm very much coming from a very spiritual perspective. And this is kind of a bridging the science and spirituality together. And it was really all about the brain and what's going on and some very interesting things that you found on your journey that really have opened up a very big area, which is, you know, our connection with the mind, body, and spirit, and really, you know, looking at how the brain and the mind work together and how you can learn to balance that. So what we generally do on the show is we start off with what your journey was, and if you could tell us what your experience was that sort of led you to this, it's not a healing modality as much as it's a balancing modality, but it's called the brain state conditioning.
Right. Well, my personal journey, my background is in math and physics as a scientist, and it's in theology and psychology as more of a soft science or human. And not that I'm not human when I'm in my math and physics mode, but some people say that that's true. But I spent 40 years in the computer software field.
As a computer geek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I am, actually. And I love it. I love computers, too, by the way. I still love them all the time. But what I did was, in early 90s, I was assaulted by four youth. One of them had a baseball bat. And from that experience, it's the greatest experience of my life, by the way. From that experience, I spent 9 years or more, over 9 years, battling post-traumatic stress. So I used all different modalities all over the world, spiritual, psychological, and medical. I wasn't really successful at that, and even though I mitigated some of my symptoms, I didn't free myself from them until I realized that I could use the basic law of quantum physics, which is that which is observed is changed. And through that law and through some technology, observing my own brain, I could see it change. I could observe it and watch it change. It's almost like, a child isn't naughty when the parent's watching. I'd say, I see you. It's amazing what happened, but of course, from that somewhat joking, but yet it wasn't joking. It was exactly how I proceeded. Mm-hmm. Position, I put together a set of algorithms in computer software, and we see now by placing electrodes, which we've developed, they have computer chips in them. We place them on the scalp. They observe brain pattern. And we play that in a computer. The computer diagnoses that brain pattern to see where the imbalances are. And from there, we let the brain view itself where the imbalances are seen. And it seems to self-correct because the basic hypothesis, well, there are many, but two of which are pertinent. One, we are made to be healthy, happy, hope-filled, and helpful. Two, our brain is a network, and it stands really, to some degree, outside of us. But as a network, it can feed data wrong ways. And when that happens, we lose touch with ourselves as spiritual beings and effectively, therefore, as human beings. So ultimately, if we jump to sort of the end of the road with somebody comes in, we do an assessment and find out where their brain needs to be balanced and they balance it. Ultimately, what they have they see is that they can make decisions in their life based on love instead of fear.
And isn't that where we all need to be?
And the interesting part of that is, from a scientific standpoint, and you're right on in terms of where this is kind of a place where science meets spirit.
Mm-hmm.
From a scientific standpoint, we can measure it.
It's amazing. You used two Tibetan monks to initially begin the rhythms that you wanted to, as a balanced brain. Is that correct?
Well, we used Tibetan monks to find out how brain energy worked. And it's not that we use them as the standard at all, but we use them to see how things moved. Let me explain.
Yeah.
If you would see a ballet, but you would see a dancer reach one pose, and then somebody would cover up your eyes, and when the dancer reached the next pose, they would take the cover away so you could see the next pose.
Uh-huh.
You would not see the dance. Because the real dance is between the poses. It's the movement. And that is, in fact, what we saw and learned from working with the Buddhist monks. That they had tremendous movement capability, tremendous plasticity. And secondly, they had tremendous control, so they could turn one side of their one hemisphere down to almost nothing and then turn it back on, and vice versa, turn the other one down to almost nothing and turn it back on.
When they needed it.
When they were in certain kinds of meditative states.
Hmm.
So what we learned from working with them was that there isn't a one shoe fits all sizes at all.
Right.
But instead, there are all feet need shoes. And so we learned that what we could help these brains do effectively is find a way to operate from a position of homeostasis. And from that position, their movement could be as varied as was possible for that particular brain.
It reminds me of another author that I read who made a beautiful analogy of how we're all diamonds and how each facet of each diamond is completely different. You'll never find two diamonds that are the same. Yet in the core, we're all the same. So yes, we're all one. But, you know, we're individuated expressions of God. So we have a completely different way that we experience everything and express ourselves. So that's kind of what you're talking about, in that our brain can't work in one. Well, it could, I guess, if we were all really completely connected to the one, but I think our brain, I don't know if our brain would be able to do that as so much as our heart and our mind, possibly.
But let's say that I am starving to death right now, and you introduce me to information clearly disseminated to me for my higher consciousness. The likelihood that I'm going to be able to hear it and understand it is almost zero. Huh?
Right, because you're in survival mode.
Yes. And the likelihood that an imbalanced brain is going to be able to pick that up is almost zero. And so what we do when we get to have a homeostasis is enable the person to move on from there. And moving on from there is, in fact, then hopefully what we encourage, at least, is to move towards a, we call it, you know, a peace and silence or meditative state, and to look beyond the self and to use our brain in different ways than we have before.
Mm-hmm. I like how you say that the brain isn't who we are. It's a tool that we use.
Yeah.
And that really the willpower, which, you know, a lot of people try and tell us that that's what we need when we're trying to quit smoking or go on that diet or do all the things that we're trying to do. They say that, you know, well, you just need more willpower. And you also say that that doesn't work.
I know. I could tell you that that took a big amount of guilt off my plate, but which is actually true. But it also enabled me to make some better decisions. And what we found was that there are substances or activities which really are utilized to fill in the gap or to artificially balance an imbalanced brain state. And so when we use those substances or those activities to achieve a balance and then we get done with them, the imbalance is more prominent than it was before. At least we can discern it. It's our state of imbalance more. So we have more, we're more distraught because of it, and therefore we use the substance or the activity again, and so goes the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
When we balance that brain, that substance or that activity is just simply no longer needed. It's not a big deal. So it's not that we take away when we're dealing with people, when we've dealt with people, over 1,000 people with addictions. It's not that we take away the addict's appreciation or high. It's that we give the addict and we just remove the need for that high.
It's amazing that that a technology such as this would allow people to remove the need for that high, because it's usually based, you know, on something emotional. It's usually based on, you know, some repression that you are trying to fill a void. And to imagine that it's just, you know, something that you can stimulate your brain and allow a balance to occur that would allow you to move through something that you may have had your entire life. And you have examples of it in your book, and you've had incredible success with helping people balance their brain. And I know you go to a big extent, not to say that it's not about healing. I mean, it just, as the balancing occurs, a lot of phenomenal things have happened as a result, but you're not putting that out as a healing modality as much as it is helping your brain balance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because Iris was one of the pretty interesting examples of, you know, somebody who had been addicted most of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when you see these transitions, though, in the brain, and then you subsequently hear the client tell you the stories of, I have been clean and sober for 20 years. In 20 years, every day, I wake up, and the first thing I say is, I will not drink today. And then I train my brain, and I feel relaxed, and I don't feel like there's a doom cloud hanging over me. And then I don't even think about not wanting to take a drink. You see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
It's freedom from that imbalance. But let's pay homage to the imbalance, too. In other words, the brain activates in some kind of specific pattern sometimes to keep us alive. And when it does that, it's an exceedingly important time. I mean, it does in fact keep us alive. But what it doesn't understand is that it doesn't have to continue in that pattern to keep us alive.
Yeah. And how many of us have found ourselves in patterns most of our lives, repeating the same pattern over and over again, and because of you know, something, either our ego, which seems to be tied into our brain at this point from what you're saying, is that it runs on a pattern, whether it's the endorphins or whether it's, you know, something that, that is released within our body, that from our brain, that allows us to, the peptides or all the things that they've talked about through quantum physics, it, whether these are the things that get released that make us react in the same way. And what you're saying, or what you've discovered, is that it's because one of the two hemispheres are out of balance.
Yes, and it could be, you know, we call what we do balance and harmony. And by balance, we mean in specific lobes where we see balance between left and right hemispheres and also between front and back.
Mm.
And by harmony, we mean between high frequencies and low frequencies, which are active in each lobe at any given time. So when we think about balance and harmony, we're really thinking about an orchestra playing something that's a composition. And each section of the orchestra and each chair in each section of the orchestra, that's kind of how we see it, break it down. And we do this all, you know, mathematically in a computer, of course, but there are millions of calculations as we show the brain itself in a balanced state. But the brain, and the brain picks that up very quickly. It's remarkable.
And what is the role of meditation? I mean, becoming the watcher. I mean, you talked about it, but you've also said that, you know, if you're coming from an imbalanced brain, it could take years and years of meditation before you ever get to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. So when you're coming from an imbalance, if you can meditate, which, depending on the degree of imbalance, it might not be possible, but if you are able to, what you start doing is you get peaks of a consciousness or of a sense that you're connected, not only with yourself but with others in the world and the creation around you. You just get glimpses of that. But when you come from a place of homeostasis, you get the full blast of that. You get to taste it, touch it, you get to experience it. And then when you walk away from the meditation, you're still in fact walking through life as a meditating being. It's a different kind of direction.
Mm-hmm.
We trained a CEO, and he was very strong-willed and a very driven individual. And every night he would get into his Ferrari after work, and in driving home, he would try to beat every car in front of him. Okay? And that was his goal. And then by the time he got home, he was very upset, sort of, and to some degree at least. And then the first thing he would have to do is have a scotch.
Mm.
So after training, he came to us about the seventh session or so, and he said, I came up over the rise where the six lanes of traffic are going to be packed in front of me before I could see my knuckles start to get white on the steering wheel as I set myself into motion, right, to be the rocket that wins.
Mm-hmm.
And this night I came up over that rise and saw the six lanes of traffic ahead of me, and I saw myself as part of a caterpillar that was all moving along.
Yeah.
You see, that's a complete different understanding of not only of himself, but of the world around him.
Mm-hmm.
There was a connection then.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that connection was made possible because he got back to his, you know, his natural self, if you will.
And a deeper natural self at that.
Yeah,
to be able to make that connection. You mentioned that, not like this, that we are mostly space filled with energy, but the energy flowing within the space is what we want to change.
Yep. And if we think about that, it could be energy and information are interchangeable. They're synonymous.
Sure.
So when we can get that energy flowing from beyond ourselves, or that information flowing, which is there from beyond ourselves, through us, we will be activated not only optimally and in a most and most profoundly happy, but it will be the most solid. So we can weather the storms that we have to weather in life the best way possible.
You talk that we're human doings, and we need to become human beings, and that we derive most of our worth from our activities.
And so we're really seeing that now, aren't we? Right? In the last 6 months or so, culturally, we're really seeing that.
Yeah.
Because we face more depression. We have about 130 plus offices in 18 countries around the world, and we get about 280 new clients a week.
Mm.
And since December, we've seen more depression and anxiety than we've seen in the previous 7 years, in 3 months.
A lot of fear going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we see ourselves separated from each other, and the more fearful we are, the more that's true, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we see ourselves losing our identity because we're losing our things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting time that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so how is the brain training helping these people with their depression?
Well, we've actually had a lot of people, as you might imagine, in the financial field and in the real estate field.
Yeah.
I know that might come as a shock.
Shocking, yes.
But we see that what a lot of them have done, based on having a brain that can now connect to information beyond itself, is to take another course, to change their course in life.
Mm.
And to change their course in life also for or with a purpose that's different than what they had assumed before. My mother told me, you know, she's 98 and lives in Nebraska, and she still tells me what to do, though.
Of course.
She told me that the purpose of life was to find your purpose of life. And so I think that's what they're freed to do, is to go out to seek that eagerly and openly and with just a lot of joy.
Yeah. And so, you know, knowing that I come from the spiritual part of this, and, you know, most of the time, you know, you're trying to tell people to get, you know, disconnected because they're just so, you know, especially if they're in the financial industry, they're, you know, they're 24/7 watching the news and, you know, just being bombarded with the fear that's out there. And, And, you know, most of the time you try and say, you know, just disconnect, because you need to get yourself out of this. You need to, you know, refocus, reshift, get yourself unplugged for a little while so that you can get into a place where you're feeling good. But, you know, I think that this suggests that there's more to it than that. And it's, you know, because not everybody can get themselves to that place where they can feel that balance without, or harmony without, you know, some of this assistance, which seems to be, you know, very effective.
Right. And it's pertinent, though, that everybody know that what they see is not the end of the story.
Hmm.
It's just a bump in the road.
Hmm. Yeah.
Or a barrier to go around.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the Judeo-Christian faith, it talks about judgment from the Greek text with using the word krisis. And what it really refers to is making a decision. In other words, there's one road and it comes to a point where it goes no further. It turns left and it turns right, and there you have to make a decision. And if you go one way, you're better. If you go the other way, you're not. And so it is, I think, that we go down this road and we're all collectively hitting a time where we have to choose. And we have to choose to be more conscious, and we're going to be better, or less, and we're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a great time in that sense. Mm. Might feel pretty yucky, but it's really a good time, I think.
Yeah. Let's talk about our role of intuition.
Uh-huh.
As an intuitive, but you talk a little bit different, saying that, you know, the intuition is a product of our mind, not our brain, which is very true, and that, you know, it brings in the five senses so that we can support more of the feeling and the logic. And then later on, you talk about how it's also tied in with the collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're familiar with the work of Dr. William Tiller, Dr. Tiller was the professor emeritus from Stanford, a physics professor. And what Dr. Tiller has studied in his life and proven in his life is how our thoughts can be manifested and what happens in that process. So when we worked with Dr. Tiller, and he's a good friend of mine, when we worked with him, we were looking at it going both ways, both from our thoughts going outwardly and being manifested and measuring that in the brain and to see what happened in the brain, but also to see what happened in the brain when we received new information. And that is a very interesting process, because many people, and I don't know if you had an incident that caused you, after which you were more intuitive, but many people have certainly had incidents in their life after which they were more intuitive. Was that something that you...
You know, I'm trying to think if that's something that happened to me. I know that it was something that I had when I was a child, and, you know, because I would get my my intuition through empathy or feelings, people didn't really appreciate that. So I learned to shut it down pretty quickly, not understanding that, you know, this wasn't the way everybody was, and, you know, just being able to know what people were feeling, I just assumed that that was what everybody knew. Mm-hmm. And people would get quite offended when you would, you know things about them, because you could feel what's going on in their personal energy or feel what's going on around them. So I had to learn to shut it down. It wasn't until later, when I was in just the wrong profession. Well, not the wrong profession, because I did social work, so I still would say I'm a counselor at heart. So it wasn't certainly wrong, but it was, you know, in the government and an environment that certainly wouldn't support who I am now. And so I was definitely being pushed in a direction to find my own passion through that. And I don't know if that would have been an incident that necessarily would have occurred. Usually I think you're thinking of something like an accident or something that somebody would go through.
Yeah, something like that. Sometimes it's a birthing process.
Mm, yeah.
But we can see those brain patterns where people are more intuitive.
Right.
And we have, in fact, worked with a distance healer to see the brain patterns in him when he was healing and to see the brain patterns in the person he was healing.
Oh, wow.
All of which are measurable. So, as you can probably tell, I'm a person who likes to measure stuff, you know, because when I measure stuff at different times or in different states, then I can see patterns. And still, though the computers help us enormously with looking at these patterns today, I still look at a lot of brain maps, and we come up and see various patterns emerge because of it.
Right.
But intuition is something that you can actually see and you can measure it. We have a number of people who are very highly intuitive, some of whom make their living that way as psychics or intuitive healers, and they'll come to us by wanting to achieve what you did when you were little. They want to achieve the ability to shut it off. Right?
Right.
So that they can function better.
Yeah.
They say, you know, the last thing I want to do in the store when I'm searching for the best head of lettuce is have somebody stand beside me and get wrapped up in, you know, just let me go shopping.
Yeah.
I say, okay, come on in. You know.
Oh, that's funny. And that's a boundary I think I just learned and pretty much have kept up. It's, you know, when somebody's open to it, then I open myself up to it. But most of the time, I'm not. That's something I learned, I guess, and I kept. Interesting.
But you were a child, see?
Yeah.
And so you could approach it as a child.
Right.
And as children, what we do is we approach things and we discover them. We have fun with them. We play with them. Right?
Yeah.
And that's why the text says, unless you come to me as a child, you don't get here from there.
Yeah, interesting. I like how you mentioned that, you know, it's probably any given second, but 11 million bits of information is processed by our nervous system, and only 75 make it to our conscious awareness. And that's pretty... It's pretty telling because, you know, we all have had those experiences where, you know, 100 people will see the same thing and there'll be 100 different stories of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it really relates to our perceptions and how we get caught up on things and how we also don't want to let a certain perception go because we're so caught up in that this is what happened or this is what happened to me or this is what, you know, went on that you can't see the bigger picture or be able to put yourself outside of that so that you can get to a place where you can let it go and move on.
Right. Sometimes that's because the brain has just changed so much. Let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Men and women are going and returning, they're going to Iraq and Afghanistan, representing us as soldiers there and returning. And many of them are facing post-traumatic stress syndrome, which means that most likely they are hypersensitized and hyper-alerted all the time. And it's because they achieved that pattern when they were there, and it helped keep them alive. But now, when they do not need that pattern, or it becomes a problem, actually, or a pathology, they don't know how to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do is bring the balance back, especially in the case of post-traumatic stress, bring the balance back to the autonomic nervous system, and the pathology just goes away.
And they're able to just exist back in a more balanced and harmonious place. Like they're really able to just, are they able to let go of the experiences that they had or just see them from a different perspective?
Yeah, they're able to observe it instead of be it.
Right.
And so when they see the car, the old car that's sitting alongside of the freeway, they no longer make a wild turn and endanger everybody trying to get on the other side of the freeway from that old car. Right. When their child, who they dearly love and would die for, runs at them, they have no inclination to hit the child or keep them away from them, thinking that that's a child that might be running at you who's had a bomb strapped to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Must be a horrible experience. I can't imagine.
And so they don't have, you know, and the problems with night sweats and the go away, and the problems with the quickness to anger goes away, and the problems with not being able to focus and comprehend go away. It's just pretty much amazing what happens. But they were non-focused because their brain was scanning around all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was scanning, looking for danger, and that's how they kept alive.
Hmm. Yeah. It would be very challenging to go through. And do you get a lot of people coming to you for that?
Well, we've had about 146 soldiers.
Hmm.
And I'm sure we'll see many more, you know, as time goes on.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to do any talk therapy. We're just placing, you know, those electrodes or viewers on their scalp, and then their brain gets to see itself, and it changes, and they can then, you know, after 10 sessions or 15 sessions, they can just walk away without having the pathology.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us back to, you know, living consciously and how we're typically, you know, driven by fear, and we need to have a more integrated wholeness about us where we're, you know, we're more conditioned on love and connectedness versus, you know, fear, which is suspicion and defense and competition and being combative. It's a just a really fascinating time that we're in because we do have, you know, both dichotomies, you know, sort of happening all at once within us and all around us. You know, there are people that can get into a place of you know, holding a place of love and coming from a place of love. And yet we, you know, are always being surrounded by, especially in a time like this, a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm. If we took that to a more personal level, would you say that, you know, intuitively you would think, or just experientially you would think that women would be more apt to be people who would deal with that difference better than men? You think it would be one way or the other?
Yeah, I do. I do think more women these days are definitely able to shift in a different way, I think.
I do too, and I can also tell you that, you know, the corpus callosum, or the dividing line between the left and right for the female, is about 2.5 times more permeable than for the male.
Wow.
So what that means is that the female can go, you know, from context to detail and back to context and back to detail 2.5 to 3 times faster than a male. Now, that's the good news for y'all. But guess what the bad news is?
Mm-hmm.
When we put you on the front line in harm's way,
mm-hmm.
and you face that kind of trauma that you are 2.5 to 3 times more likely to have post-traumatic stress.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that.
So what we have to figure out, I think, from understanding the brain better and understanding how it works better functionally, I'm not talking about chemically. Medical science will say that chemistry drives function, and your geek here will say that function drives chemistry. The truth lies someplace in between, right? I'm sure. But I'm holding out for my geekhood for right now.
I like that.
What we need is more information, more collaboration, more ways to discern how these differences change us, simply as men and women, as well as from different functional aspects of life. So a female will often, even though she understands a faster context and detail perspective than a male, she will also take more time sometimes to make a decision because she sees those two things.
Hmm.
See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And a male will see it from one perspective and be like a, you know, rocket going in that direction oftentimes.
Right. You mentioned an interesting thing about enlightenment. And we don't really have, I don't think we have any examples or very, I don't think we have very many examples for us, for probably for you to be able to even get a good basis on that. But, you know, it's you mentioned it more about us simply living as not separated, and that it's, you know, maybe it's not something so far from what we think or believe or have been told. And maybe it's, you know, it's through balance and harmony that we can achieve a state of enlightenment or whatever that means that we all seem to be seeking.
I think that's an accurate summary. If we are in fact understanding ourselves to be connected to ourselves as well as others and the creation around us, we just assume a different posture, a different responsibility, a different, you know, we have different work. Mm-hmm. And what we do is important, but it's not the only, you know, note in the whole song.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a wonderful place to be. And it seems to me that that's definitely a place where one could say or achieve and experience being of a more enlightened state,
yeah,
than being isolated and
separate, feeling that separation that most, yep, of us feel when we're on this such a tiny little planet with so many, how many, over 6 billion people, and we all still feel alone. Yeah, it's amazing. Okay, so I want to get into some of the examples that you talk about in your book, because I think, you know, some of them really tell a pretty significant story. I like the one about trust with the Dr. Karen and how she had a violation, which really, I mean, it completely interfered with her life. And I think, you know, that can often happen when we have a violation of trust like that.
Understand that what we talked about just a minute ago, a violation of trust is very, very, it can be profoundly damaging, but also understand that it can be much more damaging, much more quickly to a female than a male.
Yes.
And that's something we all have to understand, because we have to pay attention to that. We're equal in terms of our value, but we're not equal in terms of our function.
Yeah.
And And so when we see that trauma print from that violation of trust, it's often goes causes many other pathologies. It takes many things with it. For instance, if the violation is such that the person is left isolated and abandoned, then generally that can strongly affect digestion. It can affect how one's hands and feet can get cold easily.
Mm.
It's circulation. It can certainly have a big effect on things like cholesterol and some other things. It can have an effect on how, when we are in an emotional, a potentially emotional interaction with somebody, that we might freeze immediately,
mm-hmm.
and we wouldn't be able to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then about an hour, X hours later, we say, you know what I wish I said?
And then you play it over and over and over again.
Yeah. Next time I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And then next time comes and the same
freeze.
Thing happens.
Yeah.
Because our brain works to defend us in that manner. And it, you know, it pulls us back. It gets us into that parasympathetic dominant state, pulls things in.
Mm.
Now, if the violation of trust is one of you're walking along and you're violated by somebody that attacks you, then that becomes more of an infringement rather than being isolated, being left alone. On the other side is being infringed upon. And there you become more sympathetic dominant, or you become more hyper-alerted and hyper-activated. So there what you see is that, you know, oftentimes blood pressure will go up and be too high for that individual. Mm-hmm. They'll have cardiovascular problems in that area. You'll see redness in the hands and the feet sometimes, because the body's response is always in fight or flight. And when you change that and balance that autonomic nervous system in that way, that brain in that way, it just simply goes away.
How about, I know we talked about it a little bit, but you go into a little bit more detail about depression, because, you know, a lot of times we're prescribed antidepressants and we give all of our power into the medication that seems to have a lot of limitation because it's producing something that our brain's not producing to act as a, you know, as it's just covering it up. It's not really helping us because it's producing it synthetically instead of allowing our brain to produce it naturally. And then we get addicted to it, and we're not really looking at the illness, are we? We're just sort of trying to Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm. And though that's true, we also have to remember that Band-Aid sometimes is important, because it'll keep us from bleeding to death. In the case of depression, it'll keep us from hurting ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
And
a lot of times, I guess it doesn't.
Yeah, and a lot of times it doesn't.
Yeah.
We're talking about, you know, 200 million psychotropic drug prescriptions written per year.
Wow.
That's a huge number. And unfortunately, we can't see, or the RTEC or similar technology isn't out there yet, widely used, so that people can see, docs can see how best to use the med. they can't see the pattern and see how it's changing the brain pattern, right? Mm. But when you can see it, and or when you can get the brain trained back to a state of balance, then the person no longer feels cut off. And, you know, a depressed person will actually go into their cave sometimes, you know what I mean? They'll isolate themselves. They're not the most sociable animals in the world, right? Hi, I'm depressed, Lori, and Hallie, how about going out for coffee? You know, it doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, the whole thing about being depressed is being cut off.
Yeah.
And so what we see in the patterns is exactly that as well. And we see an inability if one of the patterns exists that they're cut off, and a pattern exists that they can't think well, i.e. they can't rationally cut through logic, then that person is in danger. That's an indicator for the person to be a self-harmer.
Yeah.
Boy, that was a deep sigh.
Well, it's a deep topic, I think. I think there's a lot of people, especially that are going through. There's just so much around us, and it's a really interesting time for a lot of different people.
Can I offer a couple suggestions for people? They might find a little help with just doing a few small things.
Mm.
For one thing, you can at times, different times during the day, touch the tip of your tongue to the roof of your mouth right above your gum line, right in front.
Mm-hmm.
And you just feel it tickle a little bit right there. And if you do that a few times a day, it helps build certain kinds of a frequency that we find that sort of an antidepressant.
Oh.
Secondly, what's also helpful, if you're facing a depressiveness, is to get the brain out of a locked-up state. So what you want to do there is to do as many things as you can differently than you've done them in the past. For instance, you may, in fact, if you brush your teeth with your right hand, you know, brush it with your left hand. Just make sure that you can clean up afterwards or whatever.
And don't wear what you're going to wear that day, you know, because
yeah.
Toothpaste doesn't come out easily.
Yeah, just do it in the shower or something. Right? So, but if you set at the head of the table, set at the side, if you read a certain paper, read a different one, on and on, kind of change your daily pattern and do things differently. And that helps, that aids to brain plasticity as well.
Hmm. Nice. We can't leave without talking about Charlotte, because I think that is a very significant case that you talked about, because she was in a coma.
A coma is simply a time for the brain to shut down everything so it can heal itself. And sometimes that healing, you know, can't happen. But for her, we could see that when she was asked to do a function, even though she couldn't do it, so we would say the language to her when she was in the coma would be, we know you can't repeat these numbers back to us, but we are going to repeat the numbers for you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then we would say the string of numbers, you know, 11, 4, 6, 5, 8, 9, 7, and now you would say them back to us, but we know you can't say that, so we'll do it 11564397. And so what we saw when we did that was that each and every time she was asked to do a task, her brain was firing like she was doing the task.
Mm-hmm.
So it changed pattern and continued that pattern during the time when she was supposed to do the task. And then we said, well, if that's the case, she must be able to hear us. So let's just train the brain. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
It didn't mean that everything she was experiencing went away. That didn't mean that at all. She still had, she was in a coma for, you know, a few months. And so she had a number of physical problems because of that.
Right.
But she came out of it and she's at home and she's taking care of her babies. And
yeah, it's a pretty amazing story. I mean, there's a lot of great stories. And I think, you know, people should get this book to really see the possibilities. And I notice that I want you to tell everybody how to find out, but I notice that there's an office in Toronto, so I'm excited. But, you know, there are offices all over the world, as you said. And, you know, how do people get a hold of you?
The book is Limitless You, The Infinite Possibilities of a Balanced Brain. And they can see more information on our website. It's Brain State Tech. That's one word, BrainStateTech.com.
Yeah. Well, it's been a delight. And I'm very glad that we had this opportunity to chat and talk more and, you know, get to know you more. And if there's anything that you wanted to tell people, because we still have a few more minutes, what would you say that they should, you know, be focused on? What should they be looking towards when they're trying to understand what's going on?
Every person that can hear this program has more capability between their ears than do all of the computers hooked to the internet on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
If you can even imagine that capability, even imagine, and then just use a little bit more of it and rock and roll. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's really it, isn't it? And we so undervalue and just don't understand the infinite possibilities that we truly have, and that we don't really get that our brain is so incredibly powerful. Like we're never going to be able to create a computer that could match what our brain does.
Correct.
I mean, it's just never going to be possible. We may try and come close, but we just will never be able to do it. And we just take that for granted. We just don't understand, and we don't understand enough of the potential that our brain can do, let alone the potential of who we are.
I know. And so I guess that if you feel stuck, you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And don't put up with it, because you don't have to.
Wow.
There are infinite possibilities.
Yeah. Well, Lee, again, it's been a great pleasure. I'm really, really happy that I read the book, and I'm really happy that you were on the show. And I look forward to whatever comes next, but it sounds like you're doing amazing things, so keep that infinite possibility brain of yours going.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.